WGNS, Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk.
Hip hip hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. We're going to have a great show today, and we want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat. Did you know that 7 out of 10 Americans suffer a hearing loss after the age of 50? Now there is a way to restore your hearing, and you need to give Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat a call today. Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat has been Rutherford County's trusted provider of taking care of all the coughing, sneezing, stuffed-up feelings for almost two decades. Their team of caring physicians, audiologists, nurses, and administrators are standing ready for you and your family so you can improve your style of healthy living. They also have a mobile hearing unit that will actually come to your home, diagnose, and fit you with a hearing device right in the comfort of your living room. Call Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat today at 848-9265. That's 848-9265. I have Patty Wright on the show with me today. Good morning. From the Red Cross. Is that the American Red Cross? Are they different? The titles are different in each country, aren't they?
Yes. Here we're the American Red Cross. And, of course, there's the International Red Cross, which is their main office and headquarters is in Geneva, Switzerland.
Oh. They do so many different things. A lot of people don't understand. I mean, of course, they're always there when catastrophes happen that are very difficult to deal with, and they're there in your hospitals when you need blood transfusions and things like that. They're there. I still remember when I was in the service, the Red Cross was the one that notified me that my grandfather had died when I was in the service.
Yes.
And I still remember that. It was so important to me. And those type things just reach out and just grab everybody, don't they?
Yes. And that's probably one of the lesser known aspects of the Red Cross, the service to the military families. But that's exactly, they provide communication between military overseas or anywhere for that matter and their families at home in case of an emergency or something like that, and provide communication between the parties as well.
You're a well-traveled lady, aren't you? You have.
I don't know about that.
I mean, you start. I mean, we were talking earlier, and you started in New York, and then North Carolina.
Yes.
And you've been into Bloomington, Illinois.
That's right.
And it's just it's almost like you're a nomad. You travel from one state to the other, like from one country to the other.
Well, a little bit. The only place I really haven't lived is west of the Mississippi. You know, I feel I have the Northeast covered when I was a child, born and raised in New York, and then moved to Greensboro, North Carolina when I was about 14.
That's a beautiful town. I love
beautiful, Greensboro. Beautiful. My parents are still there. I was just there over the Easter holiday visiting. And then when I finished college in North Carolina, moved up to Washington, D.C., wanted, you know, a little bit of the excitement of a big city, and that's actually where I started working for the American Red Cross.
Oh, wow. Did you go to Washington because of the Red Cross, or were you doing something else at the time?
No, I was not involved with the Red Cross at all prior to me living in the D.C. area. I was, after college, had moved back home and was working for an insurance company, and I had a couple of friends from college who were up in the D.C. area having a good time up there and working. You know, we were in our early 20s. They said, come on up. So I just dropped everything, quit my job, and went on up.
That's what my aunt did, Aunt Mary. I was watching the memorial in Washington on Memorial Day, of course, that night. It was one of the more spectacular, I guess, but that's not the right word. It was the most moving that I have seen in a long, long time. It was just the things, watching those GIs, it brought pride to me, but it also was very emotional watching them.
Yes.
Having to deal with the things that happened to them.
Yes, when we lived there, probably at least two or three times, we did have an opportunity to participate where you sit on the Capitol lawn and watch the Memorial Day concert or the 4th of July concert. Oof. And you're absolutely right. There's nothing more moving than that.
It's a beautiful town, but I wouldn't want to live there. And I think everybody says that.
I think you're right.
But it's the, you've got all the movers and the shakers up there. And a lot of times you look in movies or whatever, and you think that all of those really unique places are spread wide apart, but they're very close together. I mean, that was one of the things that surprised me the most when I went up there.
Sure.
Because you're in walking distance about anything you want to go to.
Yeah, well, you start at the one end of the mall with the Lincoln Memorial, and then you go to the other end with the Washington Monument, and you have all the Smithsonians in between, and then across the street is the White House, and actually the headquarters for the American Red Cross is a stone's throw away from the White House. That's wow. How close it is, yeah.
Now, one of my good friends was supposed to have been with you this morning, Patty, and I haven't seen him yet.
I haven't either.
Do you think he's out riding on his motorcycle?
I don't know.
Of course, we're talking about Bud Mitchell, one of my best friends for many, many years. And as we all know by now, he had a bad accident riding his motorcycle and ended up at Vanderbilt. And I think he was a recipient of probably quite a large amount of fluids that went into his body.
Yes, I don't know how many pints of blood he used, but I know that he did receive transfusions. There are 10 to 12 pints of blood in your body. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when you're in a traumatic accident such as that, and you're bleeding, it can leave your body pretty quickly. Every health situation, of course, is different, but there are instances where people will use 48 to 50 pints of blood. So that's four times your entire blood volume. You're bleeding it out as quickly as they're putting it in. Mm-hmm. So even though I don't know how many pints he used, yes, he is an example of a recipient who didn't have time to plan for blood to be available for him. In an emergency situation like that, you just have to be secure and hope that the blood is on the shelf of the hospital when you need it.
Now, you guys screen blood a whole lot more than you used to. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there's been so many different diseases, and they've come in from other countries and things like that. What are you looking for? Say if I'm going up, where's your next place going to be that you're going to have donors come to give blood?
Well, we have open to the community blood drives all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have our Red Cross Center here in Murfreesboro. That's open 5 days a week with the exception of Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So we have multiple community blood drives where anybody in the community could come in. And the best way to find those is to go to redcrossblood.org. Put in your zip code, and then those blood drives will pop up. But we have a great blood drive coming up on Tuesday, July 1st, which is our very first Good Neighbor blood drive, which WGNS, of course, has been gracious enough to sponsor for us.
Is that why it's called the Good Neighbor blood drive?
Yes, it is.
The Good Neighbor station.
That's right. Yes.
Now, there are some people that will not be able to give blood.
True.
And they may be on different types of medicines. It may have been a disease that they had before. Or you were mentioning something that I was really shocked about, is those of people who have been in Europe in certain places at certain times.
Yes.
It even though they may not have contracted anything or whatever, they're still banned from giving blood.
Yes. The Red Cross and our blood collection processes are all mandated and regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. Mm-hmm. So
I didn't know that.
Yes, they tell us what to do and how to do it.
Wow.
And so it is, it's very stringent, of course, mm-hmm. and there are very strict guidelines. And through the years that I've been with the Red Cross, which is over 20 now, things have changed a lot mm-hmm. in that arena. So we always say, somebody says, well, I don't know if I can give blood. The first thing we tell someone is, well, the basic criteria mm-hmm. is that you have to be at least 17 years of age, be in general good health, mm-hmm. And weigh at least 110 pounds.
What does the weight have to do with it?
It has to do with the blood volume in your body. They want to make sure that the volume of blood is adequate enough so that your body can withstand the loss of that one pint. Because it'll take about 48 hours to replenish all of your fluids, and then 6 weeks to replenish every red cell.
You're kidding. No. 6 weeks.
And then you can donate every 8.
Wow.
So they want to make sure that your blood volume is adequate enough. If you're a donor who's under the age of 19, there's even some more height and weight limitations, requirements. But that's kind of the general general statement that we have as far as whether someone can give or not. Now, beyond that, like you said, we have, reference books that are several inches high with particular health situations, whether it's medicine that you're on or travel, like you mentioned. And unfortunately, anyone that has spent any significant amount of time, I believe it's 3 months or more, in Europe between a certain time frame, which is basically the 80s, early 90s, they are not currently eligible to give blood because of the concern for exposure to mad cow. Someday that will probably change. When enough time has elapsed, that will probably change. But as of right now, those individuals are not able to give.
The Red Cross asks all those pertinent questions when you go to give.
Yes.
And I think what you're saying, all of those have been covered by when I've given before.
Yes.
But what if someone does not be totally, maybe they're not totally honest. There used to be vagrants and people like that who did not have money that would go and give blood, and then they would be paid for it.
Correct.
That's been some time ago.
Long time ago, yes.
And I'm sure all of that's been taken away and no longer utilized.
Correct.
And a lot of times, I think one of the reasons, of course, is some of the people that were given did have diseases, and they were not totally honest when they went to give.
That is true. That is true. And we all those questions that we ask and the tests that we run, before someone donates, where we check their blood pressure, their iron level, and their pulse rate, all of that is done to ensure that it's safe for you to give blood and that your blood is safe to receive. That is the full intention of any of that criteria or questioning that we go through when someone's trying to donate blood. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, beyond that, once you have donated, there are multiple tests that are run on every pint of blood that comes through the Red Cross lab system. But there are opportunities if someone perhaps donated blood and then after they left, they forgot. Oh, I forgot to mention that, I forgot about that hepatitis I was exposed to when I was a teenager, something like that. When you walk away from your blood donation, you're given a piece of paper, and on that piece of paper gives you information, numbers you can call, people you can contact to say, oops, let me tell you what I forgot to inform the nurse about. You may want to take a look at whether my blood is suitable for donation or not.
There is no way that you can say, I guess, on anything, but when you're given blood in a hospital, is there such a thing as a mathematical certainty that you will not contract something from the blood that you're given? Of course, I don't think it's possible to actually ever say that, is there?
Right. I don't think you can say beyond the shadow of a doubt, 100% certainty. However, we can say that the blood supply is the safest it's ever been. We run more tests on the blood that's donated now than we ever have. And we ask more questions than we ever have. So, the steps are in place to ensure that when someone does receive a pint of blood, that they are receiving the safest blood possible.
I asked that question because I was talking to Guy Dotson, our former district attorney here, And he had one of the best cross examinations I have ever seen in my life when he had a psychiatrist up there. And the psychiatrist was telling them that he was sure that his diagnosis was correct. And guy asked him, "It for a mathematical certainty, are you saying that?" And he couldn't.
Sure.
He couldn't say that, of course. And,
yeah.
And the judge handed me a little letter and said, "That's the best I've ever seen." I don't know why I get into these things. But is there such a thing as a personal blood bank? I have heard people say that they have given blood and it has been put away in case some type of catastrophic thing happens to them, that their own blood can be utilized. Is that correct?
No.
I didn't think so. It just didn't sound like.
There was a time way back when where the Red Cross used to work on a, like an honor system. Mm-hmm. Say, Truman Jones has donated 10 pints of blood. So if he comes in and needs 10 pints of blood, Truman's good to get those 10 pints. That didn't work for numerous reasons. One of which is, if you are someone who's not eligible to give blood, you don't weigh 110 pounds, or you had hepatitis when you were a child, it kind of precludes them from having that same opportunity to receive the life-saving blood that they need compared to someone who can donate. But so that's why the Red Cross really works on a philosophy of community responsibility, so that every person, regardless of their own ability to donate, is secure in knowing that there's an ample and safe blood supply available for them, regardless of their, health situation, economic situation, ability to donate, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So that's why we reach out to the community and ask people who are eligible donors to please give for themselves and for others. We are absolutely asking you to do something for someone else. You don't plan on using blood, and you may, but you may not. But you know that you're more than likely someone you know is going to need blood. And then, of course, there are lots of someones that you don't know who need blood. So we really work on the premise of community responsibility, asking every healthy individual who's able to donate to do so that everyone knows the blood is available for them.
Now, when you are given blood and you've had something happen to you and you're in the hospital, is there a charge? Does that money go back to the Red Cross for doing all of the front legwork to make sure that they have the blood?
When you are a recipient of blood products in a hospital, it will vary from hospital to hospital, but you will, on your bill, you will receive a charge for the blood. Mm-hmm. Some hospitals pass on a usage charge as well. Some don't. It just really depends.
Oh, I'll guarantee you they do.
most insurance companies cover all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I think what I'm saying, do they get to reimburse you for all the work that you have done? Because I know it's quite costly to go to all the places that you have to go, and you have a ton of medical people that are there making sure that everybody's safe.
Yes, we recover our costs of collecting the blood, of testing the blood, and so on from the hospitals. They will pay us for the blood that we provide them with. We are providing blood right here in Middle Tennessee for the Tennessee Valley region of the Red Cross. We provide blood to about 56 different hospitals, over 70 counties. And so you're absolutely right. There's no way we would be a functioning organization and be able to do what we do for the community if we didn't get reimbursed for the costs. And I'll give you just an example. When you think about every blood bag that we use on an individual, costs money. The gas for the bus, the nursing, costs for that. So it is quite costly, but we are able to redeem our costs that we incur from the hospitals.
Yeah, I notice you usually set up in areas that a lot of people will congregate from time to time.
Right.
And you will set up in businesses that have a large amount of employees there, and then I'm sure that they work well with you guys and give the employees there special benefits or whatever, something going on. But it is one thing that's always interested me when you give blood, there's usually always somebody that almost passes out or does all kinds of crazy things. And for to be perfectly honest with you, when I was given, I felt better after I did give blood.
Well, we need to have you as our spokesperson then. and
what,
you know,
is it about a needle and drawing blood that seems to affect
some people? And you know, there's no one answer to that question. But most of the time, when someone has a negative reaction, which mm-hmm. is a rare occurrence. Mm-hmm. It's because they haven't eaten properly before they donated.
Ooh. So that makes a difference.
It sure does. If you think about it, you know, you're losing a pint of your blood. So mm-hmm. let's say you have 10 pints in your body. You're losing a tenth of your blood supply. So you want to make sure your body is fueled and ready to go and in its best position to lose that pint of blood. Mm-hmm. So you want to eat. You want to drink plenty of fluids. We really try to encourage people to increase their fluid intake at least 24 hours prior to donating. And we also encourage them to do that through something or drinks that don't contain any caffeine. So when we go out to our high schools and colleges and we provide education to prospective donors, we really encourage them to stay away from high caffeinated drinks like the Red Bull and Monster, because that increases their pulse rates and so on. But most of the time, that's what we see. People haven't eaten correctly before. And sometimes they may feel a little bit, you know, lightheaded or tired later. It's because they didn't eat afterward. You really wanted to take care of your body and eat correctly that day. Now, the other thing that really kind of plays into this on occasion is, you know, anxiety. If someone is a little anxious about donating blood, mm-hmm. You know, then they have that pint of blood taken out, sometimes they can kind of have a negative reaction where they're not feeling so great afterward. But the majority of people, it's not a problem. And there's no rhyme or reason to it. Mm-hmm. You can have a big 6'2" guy, 235 pounds.
They're the biggest wimps.
And he comes in and has a problem. Mm-hmm. And you could have a, you know, 5'3", 115, 25 pound person come in and have no problem. I'll tell a real quick story about that. We had, when I was in D.C., we had a blood drive at the Red Cross National Headquarters. This was a long time ago. I'm dating myself, but Mrs. Dole was the president of the Red Cross at the time. Ah. So we were having the drive in the Red Cross building, so it was a big deal that everybody was, of course, on their toes that day because Mrs. Dole was going to be there. So her chief of staff came in to donate, a young guy. I don't know how old he was. Couldn't have been 30. But he came in to donate and was at the health history station where they check your vitals and then you'll be asked your health-related questions. So they check your blood pressure, your temp, and then they prick your finger for your iron level. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, we heard a big thud. Uh-oh. In the room. And we're in this boardroom at the Red Cross, which is absolutely beautiful. And Mrs. Dole's chief of staff had passed out in the chair before he even got onto the donor bed. So I tell people that story just to say that.
Was he a Republican or a Democrat?
I don't know. I didn't ask. But, you know, I just tell that story because even someone who's involved in it with the Red Cross or with blood services on a regular basis, mm-hmm. you know, and a young, healthy person, you know, they can still have a reaction. And particularly if they're a little bit anxious about it. So you have to give it a shot, eat right, and not worry too much about it. And more than likely, you'll be just fine.
I didn't realize the ramifications after you had given. It took so long to replenish your blood. I thought it was just a few hours.
And the fluid is replaced in 48 hours. And often that's kind of what makes somebody a little draggy, perhaps, mm-hmm. After they donate because they're losing that fluid. But it replenishes in 48 hours. Mm-hmm. But it takes your body about 6 weeks to replace every red cell that you've lost. You know, for me personally, when I donate, I'm very fortunate. I go on about my day as mm-hmm. if nothing happened. It does not affect me in the least. You know, I would have no clue that I've lost those red cells, but it does take 6 weeks to replenish, but you can donate every 8. So once you get all those red cells back, you wait 2 more weeks and then you can donate blood again.
So the food and is one just as important as the other? They always tell you to drink, I think, usually orange juice or something like that they mm-hmm. have for you to drink just as soon as you get through.
Yes.
And it's almost like a small traumatic experience, isn't it, when you give blood? Because you give a pint of blood, and then what about exercise? Because I think it's been a while, but I think I exercised mm-hmm. one time after I did it, and it didn't seem to affect me.
And you have to listen to your body. Everyone is different. I can exercise fine after I donate. The one thing they do ask you to avoid is any heavy lifting for 24 hours. Just because of the donation site, you don't want to have any kind of bleeding occur from where the blood was actually drawn if you're using your arms to lift. But other than that, you're not restricted in any way, but you do have to be aware of how you're feeling and listen to your body and kind of know, okay, I'm feeling pretty good, I can do this. And then if you start to run and you feel a little lightheaded, then maybe you need to back off a little bit.
If someone has not been totally honest and they have given blood, and maybe it's one of these diseases that is pretty catastrophic, is there any way at all to go back to when they gave blood to find out if maybe they had contracted that disease at that particular time?
Meaning if someone has a...
I remember years ago when AIDS came out, mm-hmm. AIDS was a big problem as far as donating blood.
Correct.
If I remember right.
Correct. Absolutely. And that was really... when I first started with the Red Cross, that was all kind of going on, but that's when the huge increase in the number of tests that are done on every pint of blood really kicked in. Because every pint of blood, for example, is test for HIV. Mm-hmm. But before we knew what that was and so on, it wasn't. So, that was really a point where the whole blood banking system changed a lot. Specifically the testing that was done on every pint. But yes, they do have all kinds of tracking systems with, blood and who that blood belonged to and so on. So they can go back and trace things and figure out where blood came from and, figure out if somebody contracted something from that particular transfusion. It's a very, very sophisticated process by which they keep track of everything has their barcodes on it, and it's all computerized and so on, but kind of beyond my expertise level, but they have very sophisticated tracking systems to figure things like that out.
And it's one of the safest things that you can have right now.
Absolutely.
Whether you're giving or receiving blood, you guys have really come a long way. It's amazing to me how the scientific process works when you're giving blood and receiving blood. So it's nothing to worry about.
Absolutely
when you
not.
Get right down to
absolutely not. It the blood supply is as safe as it has ever been. And there the day may come when we manufacture blood. Mm-hmm. There's no telling what technology and the medical science world will bring forth on our plate down the road. But right now, the only way we can get it is from each other. And when I go out and speak to school students, I try to tell them that, when you're sick and you have a sinus infection and you go to the doctor and they write a prescription and mm-hmm. you go to the drugstore and you fill it mm-hmm. and you take your medicine and you're feeling better in a few days. There are people in the hospitals who need blood in order to live. Mm. It truly is a life-saving gift. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can get it is from each other. And so we really try to reach out to the community in many different ways about the importance of giving and helping to save lives.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Patty Wright.
You can get non-medical care at home for you and your loved one. Just visit athomecaretn.com.
My name is Mary Arnold. I am the administrative assistant here at Home Care. I really love my job because I get to be interactive with the clients and the caregivers. I'm the first person they meet when they walk in the door and the last person they see when they leave. It's a very nice, relaxing place to work.
Here's Melissa Warren with At Home Care.
The one thing that I think really sets At Home Care apart is that we understand we may not be the answer for everyone that phones us, but our goal is to help everyone that phones us, give them direction, give them information, maybe lead them to where they do need to call to get the help they need.
For that personal, non-medical care at your home, contact the professionals at homecaretn.com. We're talking with Michael Martin, co-owner of Georgia Career Institute here in Murfreesboro, and they have a brand new location at the intersection of Memorial Boulevard and Northfield.
We have full-blown spas facilities and salon facilities, and the public comes in and enjoys a discount because students are doing the work. I like to tell my friends, you should really try, even if it's not our school, you should go to a school to have some services done, because those kids are not looking for when happy hour is to leave to go and celebrate the evening. They're getting graded for what they do.
Michael Martin with Georgia Career Institute in Murfreesboro.
Get out of the house. Turn off the computers, the cell phones, and video games. It's time to create some family memories with your mom, dad, your children, or your spouse. Or maybe just spend some quality time with your friends. I'm Randy Boland, Murfreesboro Outdoors, on Northwest Broad Street between Highway 840 and Thompson Lane. Me and my staff treat people the way we would like to be treated when shopping for fishing, hunting, or shooting supplies. Murfreesboro Outdoors, open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 on Northwest Broad Street. I'm Randy Boland. Now, turn off the computers and go hunting or fishing.
The Trouble with TCAP. I'm Ron Jordan with local news from WGNS. Well, WGNS reported Rutherford County school students would have TCAP scores reflected in their final report card, which would be given to students on Thursday. We did find out later from Murfreesboro City School spokesman Lisa Trail that the system received a special waiver from the state and report cards went home without TCAP scores. Their school year ended last week, which was before the state had TCAP scores ready. There was a delay in the scoring of the test, and about 100 school systems across the state asked for a waiver to not include the scores. Murfreesboro City and Rutherford County were two of them, but as we reported earlier, Rutherford County School spokesman James Evans said since they received the results last Friday, they would have time to get report cards ready to give to the students on Thursday, report cards that would include those TCAP results. An 18-year-old Rockville man in jail on various drug-related charges. Jesse Lawler arrested at an apartment pool on West Thompson Lane after Murfreesboro police responded to possible illegal drugs on Sunday afternoon. Now, Lawler gave officers consent to search his vehicle, where they allegedly found marijuana, digital scales with residue, and liquor. While the teen was at the sheriff's office being booked, Lawler attempted to hide a small bag of marijuana under the desk, which was all captured on video. Lawler, who was jailed on $5,000 bond, will also face a charge of introducing contraband into a penal institution. More news available on our website, WGNSradio.com. We're also on Facebook.com/WGNSradio. And follow our breaking news tweets at WGNSradio. I'm Ron Jordan. You're up to date. This is WGNS News.
Brought to you by Kester Chiropractic and Acupuncture Center on Broad across from Chevrolet in Murfreesboro.
Frequent headaches can be caused by many conditions, and I can help you find relief. Call 895-1253 for a free consultation.
Brought to you by AC Pro. Is your car's air conditioning not blowing enough cold air? Bring back the cold in just under 10 minutes with do-it-yourself AC Pro. Go to acprocold.com for the store nearest you.
WeatherEye. We'll see a few scattered showers and storms this afternoon with mostly cloudy skies and a high in the mid-80s. And we'll have winds out of the southwest between 5 and 10 miles per hour. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 75.
Premier Six Theater on Broad and Jackson Heights, showing all of your favorite movies. Call their hotline, 896-4100, or go seeamovie.com. Popcorn pop fresh daily. Their movie hotline, 896-4100, or go seeamovie.com. Premier Six on Broad and Jackson Heights.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back. We're Patty Wright, and this part of her show is brought to you by Metal Max Roofing and Siding, located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro. Steel is a unique material that can be recycled, conserving energy and natural resources. Steel is also an excellent cost-effective alternative to asphalt shingle roofs. Metal roofs are not only beautiful, resistant to wind damage, roof rust, but some are less expensive than asphalt shingles. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today and let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max roofing and siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693. That's 494-1693. Pull them up on the website. It's www.metalmaxllc.com. That's www.metalmaxllc.com. You know, one thing I've always been puzzled about, and you can straighten me out, everybody has different blood types.
Right.
Is it that imperative to have a match when you're receiving blood from somebody, one of these, I think there's one that you can receive, and I can't remember which one it is.
You can receive any type of blood. That's right. It, like you mentioned, there are, you have type A, type B, uh-huh. type O, and type AB. Uh-huh. And then in each of those, you have a positive and a negative. So if you are an AB, if you have AB blood, mm-hmm. you can receive any type of blood, meaning you can receive A, you can receive B, you can receive O, or you can receive AB. So if you're AB and you need blood, you're in pretty good shape because you can receive anything. So you're the universal recipient. If you are type O, specifically type O negative, you are the universal donor, mm-hmm. meaning anyone can receive your blood. So no matter what kind of blood you have, for example, I'm A positive, I can receive O negative blood. Everyone can receive O negative. So you have the universal recipient, AB, and then the universal donor, which is O negative. So we need all blood types. In a perfect world, we are going to transfuse someone with their exact blood type. If you're in an emergency situation and there's not time to type someone and find out what kind of blood they have, they need the blood that quickly, they're going to be transfused more than likely with O negative blood.
What would be the side effects if you do not have the perfect match? What could happen? Because I've always been wondering about that. I always thought, well, blood is blood. How do they scientifically go through there and determine how certain types of blood can be useful or they could be a negative effect?
Yeah.
Or what are the things that could happen?
You could become ill if you receive the wrong type of blood. If you have a body full of A positive blood like myself and you are given B positive, it's going to reject it. You know, it's not going to work. It's not going to help you, and it may make you ill. I don't know what the long-term extended ramifications of that might be. Probably would depend on how much you received and so on. Mm-hmm. But that's why they're going to, if they have any question at all, they're going to give you O negative, which everyone can receive.
Now, does everybody walk around with a card that says he's A or B or whatever? Or how do they determine that if they don't know? I guess they give a test before they do it.
Yeah. If you're a Red Cross blood donor, then yes, you should have a card in your wallet with your blood type on it. When you donate blood, for example, for the very first time, within about 8 weeks, you will receive a Red Cross blood donor card in the mail, mm-hmm. and your blood type will appear on there, so you'll know, because that's one of the tests that they run on every pint is a type test. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you would have to probably just, you know, go to your doctor or something.
There goes Mr. Jim Tracy. I think he's running for Congress, I believe. I just saw him go by.
Thumbs up. He gave me a thumbs up.
And Bud Mitchell did call.
He did.
And what did he say to you? Because he called, and I think that he got busy. No, actually, what he thought he was supposed to be on Thursday.
Yes, that's what he told me. He thought it was Thursday. So I told him not a problem and that we were going to do what we could to see if we can get him back in here to tell his story.
I tell you what, it is a great story. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the best story that I've heard. Everybody in Rutherford County was worried about him after he had that bad accident. And the good Lord pulled him through, and his wife Kay, and and he's back normal. If Bud was ever normal,
well, he felt bad that he missed the interview. He said, "You know, I would be there. I just realized that I thought I had the wrong day, so I told him not to worry about it, and maybe we can get him back in."
or tell me about what's fixing to happen. I know you got a big drive going on.
We do, and as I mentioned earlier, the
we've covered everything but that.
The summertime is the hardest time of the year for us to collect blood.
Why is that?
Well, numerous reasons. Probably one of the biggest reasons is that 20% of the blood we collect during the year, August through May, mm-hmm. comes from our schools. Mm-hmm. Whether it's our high schools and the students are donating themselves, of course, if they're old enough, or from our elementary and middle schools that host blood drives where the parents and faculty participate.
What was the age minimum again?
For 17 years old without a consent form signed. You can donate at 16 with a consent form signed.
Okay.
So Rutherford County's high schools, for example, are absolutely wonderful when it comes to participating in blood drives. Mm-hmm. They all hold at least two blood drives a year. The only one that does only one is Smyrna, but they do a huge, gigantic blood drive every January where we see almost 200 students.
So they're what's really causing such a great attendance, I'm sure, is they get out of school for a day. Is that right?
Perhaps.
Pretty much.
Well, we do kind of think that, sure, it's mm-hmm. a little bit of an added benefit that they get out of class.
Yes.
We feed them. Mm-hmm. We give them, you know, the snacks and the drinks after they donate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll give them a T-shirt. So those, I'm sure, are appealing things for the students. But hopefully they'll also have a sense of doing good for their community.
Sure,
but
do.
You are absolutely right. They, I think they appreciate that 45 minutes out of class. Mm-hmm. We work very hard to get them back to class as quickly as possible. But when the schools are closed, you know, those donors just don't appear in our donor pool like they did, mm-hmm. you know, during the school year. So that's one reason. The other is that seems like, you know, in the summer when people are traveling, there aren't as many in town mm-hmm. and to come out to our right. community blood drives. And then when we have our business blood drives, you've got people on vacation, so they're not at their workplace. Plus, the ones who are working sometimes may be pulling double duty because they have to cover for their coworker who's on vacation that week or something mm-hmm. like that. So we see a huge decline. And probably the single most difficult week for us to collect blood is the week of the 4th of July holiday.
I can understand that.
So we came right out and asked WGNS if they would sponsor a blood drive during the week of July 4th.
Good.
And they said certainly. So we are very excited about the Good Neighbor Blood Drive on Tuesday, July 1st. It's going to be part of our 100 days of summer campaign, mm-hmm. which is basically running from May 25th to September 1st. And the idea behind that campaign is that there are 100 days in the summer for you to come out and donate blood. You have an option of 100 different days. And it's really a rally cry saying, give blood, give hope this summer. You have 100 days to do it. Pick your day.
But you really need to give it as soon as you can, shouldn't you?
Yes.
Because at this present time, there is a shortage of blood here in this community.
Well, in a shortage in the sense that we are meeting the needs of our hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
We are not, you know, there's not a situation currently where we're not able to provide them with the blood that they need, which mm-hmm. is a good thing.
Yeah.
However, the shortage comes into play that we are not self-sufficient, meaning we don't collect enough blood in Middle Tennessee to sustain what our hospitals need from us.
We're not given what we should be given, or is that what it is?
Well, it's a couple of things. I
think this is a large community.
It is, and we're very fortunate, those of us that live here, in the sense that we have very sophisticated medical facilities. Mm-hmm. So we use a lot of blood in Middle Tennessee. I mean, Vanderbilt alone is they use a lot of blood. So usage is a little bit higher than average here because of those hospitals that we have. But we have enough people. We should be able to support it ourselves, but we're mm-hmm. not. We have to import blood from other areas of the country pretty much on a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So that's really something we're trying to eliminate. We're trying to become self-sufficient because we have enough people to do so. And so that's a goal of ours. So this 100 Days of Summer campaign is, you know, one way we're trying to get the word out about the need for blood and really trying to encourage people to think about it's an opportunity to save a life. Just pick one day this summer mm-hmm. and decide, I'm going to do this one day. You could certainly pick Tuesday, July 1st, and come out to the Good Neighbor Blood Drive, where it's going to be held at Patterson Park Community Center, which is very generous and lets us use their gym. Our goal is to have about 52 people come in the door. You might think that sounds like a small number, but as we were talking...
About all you can handle, isn't it?
Well, we can handle, if we plan for it, we can handle as many as you can bring. We just have to kind of know ahead of time so we can provide the nurses.
Right.
But our average blood drive in this community in Middle Tennessee is collects about 22 pints of blood. So our goal here is to collect, I think we're trying to collect about 40. So if we are successful in collecting 40 pints of blood, you know, that's almost twice as large a drive as our average blood drive here in Middle Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a stretch for us because we've never done it before and we're shooting above our average, but I think we can do it. WGNS is extremely supportive and willing to do whatever they can to make this a success. Additionally, everybody who comes in on the first will get a Red Cross t-shirt for the 100 Days of Summer campaign. So that's a little extra thank you. And of course, we feed everybody as a necessary thing, of course, like we talked earlier, after someone donates.
If they give a blood type that everybody can use, do they get a divergent t-shirt?
No, they don't.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll also have available the day on the drive on the first, the ability to collect double red cells. So I'll tell you just a little bit what that is. So when you come in and you donate a whole blood donation, the blood is drawn from your arm and it goes into the bag. We have a type of donation that's called a double red cell, which allows us to draw twice as many red cells from one donor as whole blood would. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is your blood is drawn, goes into a centrifuge, spins out the red cells, and then everything else is given back to you. So you don't lose the fluid, the platelets, and the plasma like you do with a whole blood. Yeah. And it allows us to take twice as many red cells as we would from a normal whole blood donation. Mm-hmm. And red cells are used so frequently as far as patient, you know, recipients are concerned. The more red cells we have, the better. You know, blood only has a shelf life of 42 days.
Ooh.
Yes. And so we want to make sure we have a steady and consistent supply right through the 4th of July holiday.
When you have, say you want 40 pints of blood, do you take into account the types of different types of blood that you have? Because there are certain bloods that are very rare types, and you always want to make sure that you have those in stock. And I never will forget years ago, many years ago, when I was working at the sheriff's office, we would have to do blood transfers. Someone would meet us at the county line. We would pick up the blood, and it may be we would stop at one of the hospitals here in Rutherford County, or we'd take it to another county and drop it off to another officer. They would probably do different ways, a helicopter or whatever right now. But I thought that was kind of unique that they were utilizing that particular type of service.
That is. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. When they would have an emergency and they had to get blood from one county to the other, basically we'd set up a line, almost like a relay, and go from one community to the other. And if you have that type of situation where you have to get blood, say, from Vanderbilt to one of our hospitals here, how would they transfer that?
Well, we shouldn't have that situation now in the sense that we are providing blood, the Tennessee Valley region of the Red Cross that I'm a part of, we are providing blood to all of the hospitals. We are the sole provider of blood products to the hospitals in Rutherford County, so St. Thomas, Rutherford, and TriStar Stonecrest. So we are providing, and they should have an ample supply. If for some reason... there's some catastrophic event and they don't have enough, they would turn to the Red Cross first rather than going to another hospital to get their supply. They would come to us and then we would provide, we would have our shuttle drivers and get in the van, load the blood up in the back, get in the van and send it right over to the hospital. So that's really where they would turn now, to us locally, since we have the lab there and the storage facility locally.
If heaven forbid, but say we have something really catastrophic, and this hundreds and almost thousands of people are affected by it. How would you guys, in an emergency type situation like that, be able to bring enough blood over into our community? Because I know that you have a strong line of communication across the country.
Exactly. That is certainly one of the positives about the American Red Cross Blood Program, and that we have a national inventory. Mm-hmm. So nationally, we know how much blood is everywhere in our different facilities. So when we have any kind of emergency, catastrophic event, mm-hmm. we will get blood from other areas of the country. So for example, Hurricane Sandy, mm-hmm. a few years ago on the in the Northeast, even last winter, which was so harsh in the Northeast, the weather prevented them from collecting blood. First of all, people weren't coming out mm-hmm. to donate, and then secondly, the Red Cross staff, they couldn't get places. So when you have a catastrophic or a disaster event or a disaster like that, we will turn to our national inventory system and ask for help, and they will provide blood to you. So if that were to happen here, we would turn to our Red Cross National Headquarters and say, this is what we need, and then they would send it from other areas of the country that were not experiencing a similar disaster.
Now, let's cover again where people can go to donate blood and in the time period. And, of course, I presume they can do it every day, Monday through, Friday?
The Red Cross office over there on Memorial mm-hmm. Is open for blood collections 5 days a week. They are not open on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, mm-hmm. but 5 days a week. And you can go to redcrossblood.org mm-hmm. and schedule your appointment online for that center. Additionally,
what if you're older and you don't use the email or computer or things like that?
Then you can call that office, and their number is 893-4272. Mm-hmm. And there's someone there who can make an appointment for you as well.
Good.
And then if you go to that website again, redcrossblood.org, you can search for blood drives mm-hmm. by entering your zip code, and it will give you all the open to the community blood drives that are scheduled within a 15-mile radius, and you can sign up online to do that.
Can they fill out that form that they can't fill that one out? Okay.
You mean the health questionnaire?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a common question I get asked. Mm-hmm. Can I just fill out the form ahead of time? Mm-hmm. Again, it is procedure mandated by the FDA that you have to fill it out in
the presence of someone.
Yeah, and you're actually doing it online now. Mm-hmm. We eliminating paper like everybody else, and we need to make sure that you're signed in and that you are answering. You are who you are. Who say you are who you say you are when you're answering those questions.
It's a safeguard.
It is a safeguard. But you can go to redcrossblood.org at any time and check the open to the community blood drives, or you can call the local Red Cross chapter and they can help you with that as well. To reiterate the Good Neighbor blood drive on the 1st of July at Patterson Park, the hours there are going to be from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. And you can go online to schedule that appointment. Or you can call the local Red Cross and they can do that for you as well. 52 appointments is what we're looking for. We hope to walk away with 40 pints of blood in hand. Each pint can be used for up to 3 patients, so that would be 120 people.
Wow.
That would be affected by the generosity of our community here.
Well, thank you very much, Patty. I've enjoyed having you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it so
much. Patty Wright, and I thank you for your work and what you do for the community.
Well, thank you.
I enjoy it. And we're glad to have you as one of us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be one of y'all.
And we'll see you guys in the morning at 9 o'clock, and I think we're going to be talking about gardens, believe it or not, and I think we're going to have a great show. See you then.